Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Oh yeah, I'll tell you something, I think you'll understand. When I say that something, I wanna hold your hand.
Ah yes, do you remember that night when the Beatles first appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show and they had Paul's mic turned up louder than John's, even though John was singing the lead for some reason? It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Forget about when I'm 64. The two surviving members of the Beatles, Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, are well into their 70s and still going strong in their solo careers. Earlier this week, Ringo and his all-star band rocked Heinz Hall. Last year, Paul McCartney's world tour made a stop in the Steel City. It's been 45 years since the Beatles broke up, yet their popularity endures. But why? The host asked rhetorically. Joining us for a look at the legendary rock group is Brooke Halpin. He is author of the quiz book, Do You Really Know the Beatles? Brooke Halpin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here.
If you'd like to join the conversation, 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH. The Beatles were the biggest, the most famous, and the best. In this day and age, the people who are the most famous aren't necessarily the best at anything. So let's step into the Wayback Machine. There were plenty of other rock and roll groups in the early 60s. What did the Beatles have that the others didn't?
Okay, well, first of all, they had the magic of the chemistry of the four of them as individuals. Their music, as you probably know, they basically took rock and roll from the States and made it their own. Initially, they did all covers. Mm-hmm. Then they started to write their own songs. And when they hit the States on February 9th, 1964, they were singing. Of course, their voices were different because they sang with an accent. So straight away, there was a difference in the sound when they sang. The song sounded different. And the message of all the songs, basically, in the beginning was what?
Boy-girl relationships. Love.
Love. And everybody loves love. Everybody wants love. And everybody who watched them, for the most part, fell in love with the Beatles. Of course, also, they had the different look. Back then, before the Beatles, you had groups like the Four Seasons, the Beach Boys, and they had their hair, you know, combed back, right?
Kind of, you know, really, really short.
Clean cut, clean cut. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, these guys come down with, you know, hair combed down and collarless jackets. No one ever saw collarless jackets before.
Till Pierre Cardin came along.
That's exactly right. So it was a combination of all those things, Paul, that made them so different. And different at that time was very exciting. And they were very positive 3 months after the country had gone into a big depression because Kennedy had been assassinated. So the timing was perfect.
And the Beatles themselves, they even thought that they would be a flash in the pan, that their popularity would wear off in a year or two. But it has gone on and on. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, first of all, because of the quality of their songwriting. Their songs, for the most part, is what we call classics. And they will be played today, tomorrow, 50 years from now, 100 years from now. So that's part of the reason. And also the reason why they sustain their popularity even to today. And even through, let's face it, there were so many bands in 64 that came out, or 65 that came out. And they disappeared maybe a year later. Mm-hmm. But the Beatles had the ability to reinvent themselves. You look at their albums, you know, you look at Meet the Beatles, then you look at Rubber Soul. It almost doesn't even look like the same band, let alone sound like the same band, because they were so innovative and creative that they were reinventing themselves musically by introducing different instruments, whether it be an Indian instrument, a harpsichord, or George Martin said, hey, let's do this with a string quartet. These were huge, huge moves that were happening at a time when most bands were not doing that.
And we heard at the outset the straight ahead, very simple sentiment of I want to hold your hand. And they graduated from those love songs that they did almost exclusively in the early days to social commentary. And an example of what you were just talking about, Brooke, we have a tune that started to show their edgier side. This is Day Tripper. Let's listen to a little of this.
Yeah.
And you don't really hear the vocals coming in there, but I played that song to illustrate just the difference of the guitar lick, that bass line. You didn't hear stuff like that right off. And other bands like the Rolling Stones really started to incorporate a lot of what the Beatles were doing into what they were doing.
The Beatles were always the leaders, and the Stones would follow the Beatles like most bands did back in the day. Yeah, absolutely. But that's an interesting. Day Tripper is actually a John song, even though Paul sings it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a John song. And Day Tripper, I mean, the word tripper back then was another covert way of what saying what they were doing back in those days in terms of tripping.
Yeah, well, certainly drugs became part of the counterculture, and the Beatles did do their certain level of indulgence in those. Now, we were talking about the Rolling Stones there, and they were a group from that area that has stayed together, and in fact, you know, they're still touring. They were in Pittsburgh this summer.
Yeah.
The Zombies, also from that time, reunited. They were in Pittsburgh earlier this month on this show, in fact.
Oh.
Why didn't the Beatles stay together?
Because Brian Epstein died. Brian Epstein was
their manager, right?
Yes, their manager who really made them famous, who got them from Liverpool to London, was Brian. Brian told them from the beginning, you are one unit. You are a band. You are not four individuals. And they loved Brian. They believed Brian because Brian made them superstars. Brian dies in August 1967. And John said, when he heard that Brian was dead, he said, we're screwed. And he knew it, and he was right. Because what happened, Brian was the only one that they would listen to. Now, all of a sudden, four individuals start to blossom. Oh, I want to go off and do a movie. Oh, I think I'm going to go to India for 2 weeks. Oh, you know what? I don't really want to do what Paul's telling us to do right now. You know what? I don't want to play that riff. You know, Paul wants me to play drums like this. Well, I don't want to play that riff anymore. So all of a sudden, their individuality blossomed. And the Beatles broke up the Beatles, not Yoko Ono. The Beatles broke up the Beatles.
And why wasn't there ever a reunion? I can remember, hearing, as I'm sure a lot of other people did, before John Lennon tragically was assassinated, there were rumors that they would get back together for one cause or another to do maybe a charity event.
Right.
There were always those rumors.
Right.
And, you know, John was still alive for 10 years after they broke up, so it could have happened, but it didn't. Why not?
Okay, I'll tell you why. In 1974, John was living out in Los Angeles with May Pang and hanging out with Harry Nilsson and making quite a bit of trouble, actually, at the Troubadour, etc. Paul and Linda go to Los Angeles and visit John. They go into the recording studio. Paul, John, Eddie Davis, Stevie Wonder, Klaus, I don't know if Klaus was there, and Harry Nilsson. They go into the recording studio to have a jam session. It's called a snoot and a tour. A toot and a snore, excuse me. A toot and a snore. And it's really pretty bad. It's pretty bad. But the point is this, is that Paul and John were chummy. They were warming up to each other. I have a recording of John saying, oh, yeah, you know, Paul and I is very warm now. We're very warm, you know. That's possible. You know, we might want to get together and maybe write some songs. This is 1974. John tells May Pang in 74, we're going down to New Orleans in January or February to hang out with Paul, and Paul and I are going to write some songs together.
Hmm.
He was planning on doing that.
So what happened?
He made the deal with Elton John, because Whatever Gets You Through the Night became number one. Elton said, if it becomes number one, you've got to perform live with me. It became number one. John had to go to Madison Square Garden, right, in November of 1974.
Because Elton John sang with
Whatever
John
Gets You Through the Night.
He did the harmony on that.
That's right. Yeah, John.
So then he gets together with Elton John and that short circuits any possible.
Well, so after the concert, knock, knock on John's door. It's Yoko. Yoko walks in. And they had been separated for a year and a half. And all of a sudden, it's like, okay, John, let's go back home. They go back together again. John says, hey, I'm going down to New Orleans to write some songs with Paul. John, you're a genius. You don't need Paul. Yeah, you know what? You're probably right, Yoko.
Right, and that's an interesting, just following the chronology here, Yoko had thrown him out, which is how he ends up with another woman for a while, living in Los Angeles, The Lost Weekend, and all that, which we have less time than we need to get into. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Brooke Halpin. He's author of the quiz book, Do You Really Know About the Beatles? I'm going to let him quiz me here in just a little bit. Or if a listener wants to jump in and maybe be the contestant, 412-246-2002, the number to call if you would like to join the conversation. And you appeared, you've been in Pittsburgh for a few days. You were at CMU speaking to a class of about 150 students showed up. These are people who are, you know, of college age today, still interested in the Beatles. Extraordinary.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I spoke at as a class on the Beatles at Carnegie Mellon University. Professor Schultz teaches it, and they asked me to come in to talk about the Beatles. And it went, I was planning on playing some songs. I had a list of songs to play. But there was so much to talk about with the Beatles, as you know, that I actually went beyond the duration of the class and didn't even get to the songs. But that's why I'm here in Pittsburgh, yeah.
And you have plenty to talk about because you actually met John Lennon and you met Paul McCartney.
That's correct.
Tell me about John. I think John is probably the more interesting story. You ended up at his 31st birthday party, was it?
I was a guest at his 31st birthday party on October 9th, 1971. I was a disc jockey at a college radio station in West Hartford at the time, WWUH. I had met this art student there through the station. She said, "What are you doing next weekend?" I said, "Nothing." She goes, "You want to go to Syracuse?" I said, "Why?" She goes, "John and Lennon are going to be there. John and Yoko are going to be there." "Okay, let's go." So I go. Now, I was a recording artist at the time, and I wanted to give John a birthday present. So I had a song called The Old Red Wall, and the chorus was, "It's okay to change, but it's okay, it's time to change." John had given me so much over the years, I wanted to give him something back. So I found out he was staying at the Hotel Syracuse. I go up to the front desk, true story. I said, "Can you tell me what room John's in?" And he said, "Yeah, one second, please." And he's flipping through the register. "Oh, yeah, he's in 707. No security.
Wow.
I go up to the seventh floor. There's this, you know, the Mr. Clean genie guy, like 8 feet tall, 300. That guy's standing next to John's door.
Okay.
A little old me, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, "What do you want? What are you here for?" I said, "Well, I've got a birthday present for John." "Well, you can't give it to him." I said, "Well, no. I've got orders from the president of A&R Records in New York." No, he doesn't want to be disturbed. Give me the tape." And I thought, oh, God, should I trust this guy to give? What's he going to do with the tape? Eat it for breakfast tomorrow morning? Anyhow, I gave him the tape, and I'm sure to this day that John never got it. Okay, so then I go into the elevator, and this guy with long hair steps into the elevator. Looks familiar. I said, "Hi, who are you?" He goes, "Oh, I'm Jim Keltner. I just flew in from Los Angeles." I said, "Oh, I was in L.A. a couple of months ago." He says, "What were you doing there?" I said, "I was in a recording studio recording some songs at Cherokee." "Oh, you recorded Cherokee? Oh, great, man. I record at Cherokee all the time. Cool. Hey, you want to smoke a joint?" I said, "Yeah, sure." You know, so we go to his hotel room. He says, "Hey, let me see if John would like to join us." So I'm sitting there going, holy smokers, Lucy Sky and the Diamonds, here I come. I'm going to be smoking with John Lennon. Oh, my God. Okay, so Jimmy walks in. No John. Oh, sorry. John's got jet lag. He's kind of tired.
Okay, we're running out of time here. So
sorry.
We got to get to the part where you actually meet him.
Okay. He says, "What are you doing tonight?" I said, "Nothing." He says, "Would you like to go to John's party?" I said, "Yeah, sure." Okay, so he puts me on a guest list. Go to the party. Ringo's there. Phil Spector's there. I go into a small room. I stumble into a small room, and there's Yoko and John. And Yoko is explaining an art exhibit to her parents who went from Tokyo. I'm standing next to John. I want to talk to John, this man I wanted to speak to for 6 years, but I couldn't because I would disrespect Yoko. So I'm standing next to John. He starts glaring at me and staring at me like, who the hell is this guy and what the hell is this guy doing in the room? He drove me out of the room without speaking a word to me. I was devastated. I felt so bad. Party winds down. He's walking down the stairs. I'm walking up the stairs. We stop. I put my hand out to him. I wish him a happy birthday. He shakes my hand. He says, "How are you, Brooke? Thanks for coming to my party. I hope you had a good time. You're a cool man. Yeah, be groovy, man." And his handshake, I'm telling you, Paul, was an electric bolt that went right through me.
I'm so glad you got to meet him. Now, we've got about a minute left. The book, again, is Do You Really Know the Beatles? We're talking with the author, Brooke Halpin. Go ahead. Fire a couple questions at me. Let's see how I can do here.
Okay. There's only one Harrison Lennon song composition in their entire catalog. What is it?
Wow. Something?
No.
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 What?
It's an instrumental called Cry for a Shadow.
Boy, that's That's almost so obscure it's not fair. But all right, strike out on that one. One more.
Okay, which Beatle has blue eyes?
Which Beatle has blue eyes? I am going to say that it was Paul.
Ringo.
Ringo has blue eyes.
Yes, he does.
He was just here. If I had had a chance to meet him.
You would have known.
Yes. So, yeah. So Paul and George and John all had dark eyes.
Yeah,
brown eyes.
Brown, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's something I never knew. All right, we've got time for one more. Since I've blown the first two, I must redeem myself.
Okay, who sings lead vocal on Devil in Her Heart?
Oh, boy. Is that Paul?
George.
Three strikes, you're out. It's obviously a book that you'll learn something from, because I'm a Beatles fan, and I missed on all the questions. It's Brooke Halperin's book about the Beatles. Do You Really Know the Beatles? The author, Brooke Halperin, has been with us here in studio. Brooke, thank you so much for visiting with us and talking Beatles.
Thank you, Paul.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. If you missed any portion of the program or would like to revisit past segments, you can go to our website at WESA.FM. Until tomorrow, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long for now.
No, say it on me, no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied.